This week on the podcast, joined by Father Thomas Loya. Father, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Leo. Good to be back.
We see now what, you know, and I, when I say this, I think we've always had a degree of polarization, right? We've always had a degree of separation. I think one interesting thing that I've seen recently are these charts that show how Congress has voted over the course of the past, I don't know, 50 years, 30 years, 100 years. And it's interesting to watch this as, of course, the microcosm of our representation there in Congress. Such amazing polarization on issues where you don't really have a lot of bipartisan support on anything. That's just one example. But you want to talk a little bit about how we are so divided and how really the Catholic worldview would solve that if we would let it.
Yes, absolutely. And this is, to understand this, we have to understand, first of all, I like to debunk what this understanding of Catholic is. Okay, yes, it is in a sense valid to say that Catholic is a religion. It has teachings, and some would even say, so they use the word rules.
Right.
However, I like, for our purposes here, I always like to debunk this or to replace that with a deeper, better understanding. Our faith is really not about teachings. The church teaches, but it's God who has the teachings. We just point to those.
Right.
And we don't have rules. We just have ways that we live out that mystery of God, that way of life. And the if I were to describe the genius of it, the central genius of the Catholic ethos. See, it's an ethos. We have to really, I know it's hard probably for listeners, but we have to really step out of this idea of thinking of it as a religion. It's an ethos. It's a way of seeing. It's a way of perceiving the one and only way of reality, of how things work. And the way they work is in a beautiful, ingenious kind of complementarity, which I like to call living in the both and. And I think if we live that way, if we adopted that kind of lens, and especially when it comes to government, politics, and so on, things would go so much better, because that's the truth of life. Life is not, you know, things are not black and white. They're not either or. You know, last time I looked in the DSM manual, you know, the manual for mental disorders, it's a, and I'm a counselor, you know, come from a counseling background, bipolar was a mental disorder.
Right.
We've raised it to a level of an art in our culture. it's incredible how ingenious we are at creating polarization. And I think a lot of that comes from, first of all, as always, I always like to say, trace things back, trace the gift trail. Everything comes from a gift. And the Western mind has a great genius for rationality, compartmentalizing, kind of examining things, analyzing things, organizing things. That's a genius, okay? But the genius always has a kind of a fallen side. And the fallen side would be to become too compartmentalized, too bipolar, where you can't believe that this can be that at the same time.
Right.
That there is something that the other side has that is valuable too, whereas our so-called our side is valuable, but they have something too, and we can put those together. And I'm not talking about, a lot of times in politics they would say, well, you're talking about being a moderate.
No, it's not
about a moderate. It's not really about any category.
Right.
See?
Yeah, again, trying to compartmentalize, right? Well, then we got to put that in this other compartment. Then we got to put this over here as a moderate because we don't know how to handle that.
Exactly. No. Exactly. What it is, in other words, collapse the boundaries of these things. I know in psychology and human relating, boundaries are good, but in this case, we're going to collapse the boundaries so that we can be more diffusive, more integrated, that we can move in between each other's camps, as it were, and come up with what is the truth, with what works. You know, this is the Catholic ethos. This is, think of, again, Eucharist is the source of some of our existence. Okay, what does that tell you? Okay, Eucharist, it's the body of Christ, the real presence of God, but it means so much. Even, you have to unpack that. It means that we can live as our source and solid, the very heart of our sacrament, the soul of our faith, is the both and, that something can be this mystical, invisible thing and physical, invisible all at the same time. That this bread and wine, which we take into our bodies as bread and wine, is at the same time the body of Christ, not either or. And right there, the Eucharist is what gives you that incredible, perfect vision that is the absolute center of the Catholic ethos, that if it was taken and applied to the secular world, you know, to every discipline of life, you would have much more productivity, much more fruitfulness, much more but better results in everything. Yeah. Everything would turn to gold. Everything you touch would turn to gold.
Well, you know, I don't know that I've ever really thought about what you just said, Father, that the Eucharist is the prime example of the great both and, right? That you think about, and it's bread, it's wine, it's the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ, right? It is humanly made, of course, the work of human hands, as we hear in the Mass, yet it is divinely constructed. You know, I mean, it's all of this total, it's the total package, yes, as we understand as Catholics, the source and summit of our faith, but to even metaphorically understand what that means on a greater scale, amazing, right? If we truly intimate that.
Yes, and that's the whole point of even this program, Leo, what you're doing with this media, this radio program, it's to get out there to as many people as possible the right vision, the right way to see things.
Amen. Yeah.
And it's not like me is better than you. It's not like, my church is better than your church. It's not even about churches. It's about just how you see and live in reality.
Yeah.
And reality is lived in that intersection of the both and. It's like we live in the confluence of complementary things. As human beings, look at us as human beings. We are body and soul, not either or. You can't separate the two. I mean, where does the body start and the soul begin within us? You cannot make that distinction, even though they're separate entities, very distinct entities, separate. They're not separate in their existence. They work together. We are body and soul together. You know, we are this. We're the image and likeness of God, and even the way we live things. You know, we can be like the Psalm says. You know, we are so lofty and yet so lowly, all at the same time. And to live in that reality is to really understand what it is to be human. And you know, we're seeing that even in the it's interesting, Larry. We're seeing that in this whole thing in Texas.
Mm.
You know, that people are coming together by default, and they're kind of living in the both and.
Yeah.
Like one guy said, I remember one guy said, you know, my neighbor over here, I don't even talk to him. I don't even know him.
Mm.
Now I'm saving him.
Yeah.
I'm taking him out of the water, you know? So here's this person who is both stranger and brother to you all at the same time. You know, this is, and look how beautiful it is. You know, it's amazing, Leo. For the first time since 9/11, this has not happened since 9/11, I believe, from my observation. Never has the news been complete. The color of the news is completely colored now by these beautiful stories.
Mm. Yeah.
Of heroism and people reaching out to one another and the virtue and the strength, the resiliency of the Houstonians and people coming to their aid. That's right away the top story now.
Oh, yeah.
And I have not seen that since 9/11. And that's living in the both and. Yeah, you are my nice stranger. I don't know you. Maybe not married to you. But same time, you are my brother and my sister. And so I will love you in this way, even though I don't know you. You're both stranger and family to me all at the same time. And you see, and what do we see? What's the media all excited about? They're seeing beauty there.
Mm.
They're seeing the order as it should be. Mm. It's unfortunate. It takes, you know, tragedies to really bring that out in us. But it is. I see it right there. I see we're living in the both and right now. In other words, we're no longer east and west, north and south. You know, we're no longer this or that. Who those people that are helping each other, that are caught in those floods, do they ask each other, well, are you a Democrat?
Yeah.
Well, then stay out of my boat because I'm a Republican, you know? No, they're not asking those questions. There is no black-white. There is no polarization now. It's just we are strangers, and at the same time, we are brothers.
Well, one of my favorite stories, I posted this over on my Facebook page, is the Muslim community, I should say, and are the mosques there who have opened their doors for shelter, and they're there with supplies and everything they possibly can do for their community. And what a beautiful opportunity to paint our brothers in the Muslim faith in the proper light as well, and not as our enemies and not as terrorists, but those right. who are there with their doors open and their willingness to help. And you know, it's unfortunate that it takes this type of situation. What we should realize is that we're always in crisis when we're disintegrated, you know?
Yes, exactly.
If there's a disintegration, it's going to lead to isolationism. Isolationism is going to lead to this opposition of polar opposites. And that's what we unfortunately see so frequently, is that disintegration playing out in things like Charlottesville. So, you know, I think it's beautiful. We've got the Charlottesville example from a couple of weeks ago. We have the Houston example. Now, you talk about the way things are supposed to be versus the way things should never be. We've got the two extremes right there.
Yes, and you know, Leo, there's a piece of me that says that it's almost as if God came along and said, these people in America need to be cleansed. They need to be washed clean.
Wow.
You know, I can't help seeing that.
Permissive will, right? We understand the permissive will of God will allow things that look very tragic and challenging in order to bring about a greater good. I mean, and the prime example of that is the cross, right? We know that the crucifixion is the utmost example of that. But
going back to you said about the Muslims, now it's no longer, oh, those people are there, they're Muslims, they're not us, we're Christians. Well, now it's like, hey, we're brothers now.
Yeah,
you know, we're still different. They know that.
Yeah.
But now we're brothers. So now again, there you've got the both and happening, and it's always beautiful when that happens. It's balanced. It's integrated when you live in the both and. That is not to be confused with so-called compromise or being a moderate or whatever.
Right.
Or meaning like being wimpy or compromising on principle.
No.
It doesn't mean that at all. It means really living in the truth of life, the way it actually works, you know. And if we could learn to do that, you know, all the things that we seek, you know, I think one of the reasons we perpetuate polarization. Because one of the reasons is, I think, you know, we seek, it's a way of having power.
Mm.
It's a way of identifying ourselves and having power, assurance of who we are. We're not those people. We're these people here, and we're right. They're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel a certain sense of false, like, security or pride or righteousness.
Right.
But we would actually have a deeper, greater, more beautiful feel if we lived in the both and rather than the polarization. And remember, the both and does still mean difference, but it means complementary different, not polar.
Yeah, not oppositional.
Not oppositional, exactly.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I would say is, if it is true, which we call this podcast, What If It Is True? If it is true that, as Jesus says, the two greatest commandments, and really all of the commandments, boil down to love God and love others, we only truly love God when we love others, right? I mean, it kind of has to... It's an equation, right? It's not like, okay, as long as you're loving God enough, then yeah, maybe you can kind of skirt on this loving others thing. It's not that. The only way we can truly show our love of God is through the love of others, and that's what it's about. That's why it's so compelling, I believe, to see the stories that come from tragedy where humans are doing what they're supposed to do.
Yes, and it is. People ask the question. Of course, even I, looking at these people, you know, sometimes you know, it comes to your mind. Well, you think, well, they're being like being punished. Why are they being punished? Why are they feeling this? I mean, I'm here in Chicago area, Leo. I'm having gorgeous weather, absolutely heavenly weather, and then watching on TV people who are suffering terribly by weather, Mother Nature. But again, why? Why does God allow? A lot of people will lose their faith or use that excuse not to be connected with church or faith, because look at, if there was a good God, why we allow such stuff? All these innocent people, like something like this. Well, the answer is because God is still in control, and He has His ways, but He allows things. Not that He wants bad things, but He allows them because He is God of everything, and He will bring beautiful, wonderful things out of that, as we're seeing right now. You know, really, the tone of the reporting now has shifted to, heroism, to the beauty of the human spirit.
No.
It's not just, oh, here's this terrible storm, here's all the injury. I mean, there is that. But the profile now of human beauty is taking over, even the perception of what's going on there. And they talk about rebuilding. You know, rebuilding always means something positive, you know? Yeah. It means like, you know,
rebirth.
Making things better, making them newer. You know, it's like a cleansing is going on. I mean, we're not happy. It's terrible to see. But here, once again, there's the both and. It's tragic. We acknowledge the absolute horror and tragedy of this. At the same time, like you said, Leo, the cross. We're witnessing the cross. At the same time, there's all this beauty happening, and there's so much more beauty to come. Mm. There's so many Americans are going to pull together. They're saying that some of these rivers there, Leo, are going to continue to rise into October.
Wow. Yeah.
October. These people aren't going to be able to come back home for maybe a few months.
Mm.
So it's pulling America together in sympathy and help and in fraternity. So there's, in a sense, we are being, in a sense, washed clean. And, you know, we're being given a kind of a sociological bath right now in a kind of a mystical way. Too bad it has to happen this way. We do not take away in any way the pain, the suffering, the tragedy of it. But the beauty of our faith is that it's not just tragedy and pain. Look at all this beauty that's coming out of it and more to come that we can't even predict. See, that's the both and. And that's the difference of living by faith that sees the both hand, and rather than living in a polarized way.
One of my favorite images that I've seen so far of this relief effort was a young black man on a jet ski, water bike kind of thing, with an older white woman on the back of this that he had rescued from her house. Obviously a very nice, you know, if somebody's got a front door that's got double panels and you know, side glass and then a huge grandfather clock in the foyer, probably a pretty nice neighborhood that was flooded. And here he is riding around on a jet ski rescuing people from their homes. And just a beautiful image of what we would normally not see, these two worlds coming together, that's happening. And again, it's unfortunate it takes this type of event to see that, but man, when you see it, it's so beautiful.
It is. It's absolutely beautiful. And that's what you're seeing, is that mystery of both ends. That's Catholic.
Yeah.
What you just described, Leo, that is Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not some institution organized by a bunch of celibates in Rome with rules that make us miserable and all.
Yeah.
No, that's not what Catholic is. That what you just saw there was Catholic. Catholic is just seeing the invisible God made visible, in other words, made real, made tangible, you know, taking what is in heaven and making it, enfleshing it, making it tangible, making it visceral here in this physical earth, on this physical planet. That's Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah. One time I was in adoration praying, and I kind of had this concept of an acronym for FISH, right, which was feeding, including, serving, healing, right? And I thought, you know, if we're able to do those four things, if that's what we do, that's Catholic. Like you say, it's going to look like something. It's going to present a witness. It's going to show others that this is what we're about and this is how we operate. And, you know, do we as Catholics need to be fed by the Eucharist? Yes. Do we need the sacraments? Yes. But that's not what others see. That's not the witness that's out there.
Right.
If we can have this truly tangible offering of our physical lives, of whatever we're doing that looks like something, because all of those look like something, right? All of those four actually exhibit something that can be experienced and witnessed. If we do that, that's Catholic, right? That would change the world if we all decided to do those.
Exactly. That is Catholic. And you read in John's Gospel, Leo, where it says, you know, he dwelt among us. You know, the beginning was the Word. Word was with God, and he dwelt among us. Well, the more literal interpretation of that is he pitched his tent among us.
Mm-hmm.
He first came among us. You know, he didn't come flying down with a new set of commandments carved in stone, and here it is, people, you better abide. He pitched his tent among us. He became us. And from there, he was able to then people could receive him. He could preach. He could do his work. But he had to become. He had to pitch his tent among them, among us. And that's the same kind of thing. The Catholic thing is a way of pitching God's tent among people, among the world, and letting them just live and see what that is. Your Mother Teresa, the same way, of Calcutta. You know, she went there and she just started with the first person laying there at her feet, and just pitched her tent among those people. And look at all the people that have come to follow her, all the nuns that turned to her and, you know, became part of her order and some worldwide. And that's the Catholic thing. It's living this reality, this one and only reality, which is very simply making that invisible God visible in a physical, tangible way, in this tangible, visceral, physical world.
So, Father, I mentioned that acronym. I was sharing this with someone. I don't know if it was social media when I did this or whatever. And I remember criticism coming my way because more or less it was, well, Leo, we really can't heal. We can't do that. And you don't say that it's healing through God's grace. I was like, you know, why are we picking this thing apart? You know, why don't we just try to live this way? And correct me if I'm wrong. Yes, Jesus gave God all the glory, of course, and said, hey, it's not my power, but the one who sent me. We see all of this example. But I don't recall him saying, go and cast out demons, go and heal and serve, and just make sure that everybody knows it's me. He didn't say that. He didn't say, and just make sure that you give me the glory. He just wants us to do it. He just wants us out there doing it. God will get the glory ultimately if we live that way. But unfortunately, we think we got to shove things down people's throats to the point of them getting some sort of message from us. No, just live this way. Live this way and watch what message comes of it. That's what I think.
Yes, I recall in the gospel when the apostles were trying to cast demons out. They couldn't do it. And a man came to Christ and he said, well, why couldn't we do it? The apostles said. They were amazed. You know, he gave us this power. He said, because it's going to be cast out by prayer and fasting.
Exactly.
What Christ was meaning was that you guys aren't, it's like you're relying too much on your power now.
Right.
You've got to be more a person who is relying on me, you know, prayer and fasting. In other words, it's about making me present among these people. It's not just a power that you have within you, you know, that you've got this power. It's not working, you know, like abracadabra kind of thing, you know. Jesus was pointing him to a much deeper level of communing with these people. And it's that kind of a thing, too.
Yeah, which I believe is authenticity, right? I think there's something about it, true authenticity. If we understand what that word truly means, it means that there is an author and it's not us, right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, it's not right. It's not us.
And
no,
if we're truly being authentic, we are going to be living the life that was authored through us, for us, not in some sort of weird predestination, you know, Calvinism sort of thing, but in a true way of who we were created to be. And it's kind of how we started this conversation. When you look at what we see happening now, when we look at these examples of response, of human response, of human outpouring of the grace that was created within us, that's what it looks like. It looks like something that's authentic.
Right. That is the key word. It's authentic, to being genuine. People are attracted to what is genuine, what is authentic. They're just drawn to it. They can't necessarily, you know, maybe describe it, you know, but they're just drawn to it because it's authentic, it's real. And that's, again, that's the Catholic thing. It's being fully human. It's being truly human. It's being truly a communal. It's living in that both and. That's authentic living, is living in the both and. Even God himself was both and. He's three distinct persons, yet one God. How can that be? I know our Muslim brothers and sisters, they have a hard time with that concept. Well, anybody does. It's a great mystery. But the fact is, you accept that. You live in that mystery. Don't figure it out. Live in the mystery.
Yeah.
We live in a God who is three persons, yet one God. He's the righteous judge and the lover of mankind. He's not either or. You know, we can't make him out. You know, it's like, we, you know, we talk about, a lot of people talk about, you know, the old church, the good old days, whatever. well, that was so much, you know, the slant that way was a God who was more or less the righteous judge. Mm-hmm. Everything was a sin. You know, we're always going, all going to hell because we never. Now then we rebelled against that. Now God is like, you know, the Pillsbury Doughboy or something. You know, no, it's not that way. Yes, He is gentle and meek and humble and merciful and the righteous judge. And you put those together, even God Himself is inherently both and.
Yeah.
And to understand in that way is to understand Him better and to have a better relationship with Him.
And Father, I would even go to the next step and say, you know, God is the both and.
Yeah, right? Yeah, right.
And I think that if we embrace that understanding that, you know, it's multidimensional. It's not necessarily just this and that. It's holistic. I said this before we started the recording. To understand the Catholic ethos is understanding that there is a holism of it. It is something that is complete. It's complete in the understanding of that it is multidimensional. It's not moderate. It's not left. It's not right. It's
exactly.
Not political. It's this taking things as they are, as the whole, as complete reality, complete authenticity, and realizing what that looks like. And also, especially when it comes to humans, especially when it comes to God's greatest creation, that He says, this is how you prove you love me, essentially, is by loving others. It means embracing individuals where they are, in their pain, in their suffering, as they are, whatever, and maybe not even trying to change them, but just because of who we are, because of our willingness to accept them, amazing things could happen. Case in point, talking about this, these rescue operations that are underway in flood-ravaged Houston and around the area, just for the fact of people getting that type of assistance, there's an amazing depth of gratitude. And, you know, that's how we should live our lives anyway, but maybe they never have known gratitude. I heard an interview on NPR just yesterday with a young woman who was talking about how gracious she really was. I mean, they live in an upscale neighborhood. They think that they're safe. She's watching floodwaters come down the street. She's watching it hit her yard. Next thing you know, she said it was so quick before there was a foot of water in the house. And they knew they had a plan, a loose plan. She said, I wish we'd have been better prepared. But they knew they were going to get to their neighbor's house down the street who lived on high ground. And his house was untouched. And they ended up there. But she's like, you could just hear this depth of gratitude just for that guy saying, hey, guys, I don't know what's going to happen in this rain, but, you know, I'm up here. So if you need me, come. She's like, it's Josh's house. I never even knew him until this. You know, but so gracious that here's a guy who's living like a Catholic, right? He's got the Catholic worldview for saying, hey, I'm up here. You guys need me. I'm here. Just come on anytime. And they did. And how beautiful is that?
Absolutely. Because it's fully human. It's what humanity was meant to be from the beginning.
Right.
You know, and isn't it beautiful? Like I always say, Leo, that the greatest days in America that I can remember, maybe the greatest days ever, was 12, 13, 14, and 15.
Yeah.
Those several days afterwards.
Yeah.
It's like the whole country, like the Houston thing right now, Hurricane Harvey thing that we're seeing that we're talking about here, the beauty of it. It was like it was over the whole country, you know. And this is bringing the country together, too. But 9/11 really brought everybody became brother and sister to each other. From one day's attack, we all became that. And I'll tell you, Leo, it was like euphoric. It was like, man, this is like, we're getting a little snatch of heaven and of how earth was supposed to be. This is actually how this is what is normal. You know, we like when they talk about these heroic things, are really how human beings are supposed to be normally.
Right.
We're witnessing normal humanity now.
Right.
Not extraordinary.
Right.
it's
ordinary time. That's what it's supposed to look like all the time, right?
You know, and how I wish, Leo, when, you know, the news, you know, I can hardly watch it because it's always point counter, but it's always bipolar.
Right.
Why can't they say, okay, you know, they present an issue and they always say this, like a broke record. They'll say, well, they present the issue, then they say, now here's this side of it. Now we're going to have the other side, you know, and they go back. Why can't they just say, let's look at the issue from 360 degrees. Let's just penetrate and walk around this issue and see where the truth of it is.
Right.
Why does it have to be point counterpoint, as if that's the only way to see everything?
No.
You know, I'm getting to the point, Leo. I have to admit, I'm watching less and less news because it's harder for me to take this bipolar when I know that's not the truth. And each one, you know, they war. So at the end, whoever wins at the end of the news show, that's the truth then. You know, they won, they beat the other guy down, and, you know, the host has the last say. And, I used to get a kick out of Bill O'Reilly. He'd tell one of his guests, you know, okay, you get the last word.
Yeah.
But he would put the last word in.
Yeah.
You know, because to make sure that the point at the end of the sentence before he went off into a commercial was his perspective,
that's
and
right.
he was right, and that's it. You know,
it never wrapped up with their last word. That's for sure.
Yeah, never did.
Well, I'm privileged. I fill in a lot at a news talk station in my market, and I'm there with callers who don't always agree with me. And one of my favorite things to do is simply ask them questions when they come on with this opposition, whatever it may be. I'll try to dig a little Socratically into what it is that they're really thinking to try to get to the essence of truth and really try to get to, first off, is this something that has just been embedded in you from some other source, or is this something that you truly believe? And if you truly believe this, what is it that created this belief in you? And it's pretty surprising what can happen in those handful of questions that I generally would ask someone to try to get to the essence of what they're really talking about. It's amazing what can happen to get to that truth, to understand really what that truth is. And it's, there's not enough of that. And I'm not saying that to toot my own horn and say, well, I'm doing it right. It's just that there's not enough. We don't take the time to explore and to also make other people, because, I mean, if you're asking someone questions, they've got to think about their answers, and they've got to be able to give a defense for really why they believe. And sometimes, as I've discovered, their offense is unraveled through my questioning, because they really can't find the offense anymore because they have nothing to really stand on. It's pretty spectacular to experience when it happens.
Boy, Leo, you must have heard one of my talks. That's one of the things I always recommend to people.
Is that right?
Exactly that. Yeah. Well, I tell them. I have this, you know, it's a fun story. You know, I said, I tell people, never argue, just answer a question with a question.
Yeah.
And I say, I learned that from my Irish friends. You know, I asked my Irish friend, Pat. He says, Pat, why do you Irish always answer a question with a question? He looked at me and said, do we know? You know, but you know, it works, because what you're doing is, just as you said, you're teasing out of them, in a sense. I call it like teasing out of them what they're really thinking or believing, and that's going to like put it out there for them to see, and it's either going to have a lot of substance, or they're going to be able to see that, you know, it's starting to fall apart.
Yeah.
You know, I can't really articulate, or when I present this, take this position out there, really tease it out of me, when I start to hear it now, look at it, it starts to fall apart. And so if you, in a sense, you so-called, it's not about winning an argument, but in a sense you do win the argument, but not by arguing. Mm. Like if that person really, you know, is off base in their position, you tease it out of them so they can kind of see that, or it kind of exposes itself rather than fight and argue. And so oftentimes we all want the same thing. You know, we just come at it different ways, or our understanding of that thing or how to get there is where the difference is. Sometimes we don't want the same thing, but I would say most of the time when you get deep enough, people want the same thing. They just think that they see it this way, and you think the only way to arrive at that thing is this way, which is different than your way, so your way is wrong. No, why don't we look at, are we asking this? I think I told the story to one time, when the woman doing the protest, and she was protesting us, and I walked over to her, and I reached a common place where it was caring about women. We were here caring about women, and she was protesting us because she cares about women.
Right.
Now the discussion, we can have a discussion now. Okay, let's talk about the good of women. How do we understand that? How do we arrive at that? This is where we differ, but maybe by understanding that we want the same thing, our differences can be lessened or resolved, or we can come to more of a commonality.
There's a great book I read a few years ago. I actually need to reread it because it was so healing at the time, and it's something that I need to reexamine. But I love this approach. This woman, not from any kind of Christian standpoint, even really, I think she counsels and works with people, but not as a licensed therapist, just from her own life experience. But the book is called Loving What Is, I think is what it's called, and I don't know if you've heard of this, but basically this woman disarms every challenge in anyone's life by a couple of simple questions. And she'll ask basically to wrap things up. She'll say, okay, I understand where you're coming from. I understand that this is frustrating. I want to ask you something. If you could, if you could let this go, I'm not saying that you have to. So if you could let this go, what does that look like to you? And then the person answers that. Well, if I could let it go, I guess it would look like this. Great. Again, I'm not asking you to do that. I just wanted to make sure that you know, if you could let this go, if it's something that you might be able to do, then she says, now tell me again how you, because you were pretty upset about this initially. Just what are you thinking now? And what she did in just that one little exercise of getting them to kind of what you're talking about, this 360 approach of whatever it is, for them to personally start thinking about it as if they let it go, even though she's, I'm not telling you to do that. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to do that. I just want you to think about, if you could, what would this look like? Okay, now tell me again what you're so upset about. And she says 95% of the time, people are laughing at themselves. They're laughing at themselves on the other side of this because they've realized just how ridiculous their angst and frustration was now that they've realized that it's something that they could let go. It's amazing. It's an amazing exercise.
That's brilliant. That is a brilliant technique.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Really, and that's how it is for so many things. What if we let it go? What would that mean?
Yeah.
What would it all look like?
Yeah.
When you really look at that, and that's that teasing it out of the person and getting it out there objectively in front of you. You can really look at it instead of it being so internal, sort of like it's wrapped up in your emotions and your heart and your angst and all that. It's like, no, pull it out there. Let's pull it out, tease it out, and look at it objectively. What is this really?
You know, and I'll say this as we wrap up. If you look at Maslow, I know you're familiar with the hierarchy of needs.
Yes.
On that survival level, there's nothing else matters, right? Nothing else matters.
Right,
and
right,
you exactly. only get to this lofty level, which of self-actualization, as he calls it on the top, where you can actually begin to form solid opinions that would be oppositional against someone at
yes.
that point. But he clearly suggests that on that lowest rung, there's something that is there's only one focus. I think that that's what happens in these situations, like what we're seeing with the flood, that it brings you to that point of survival, at which point nobody's concerned about growth. Nobody's concerned about relationships. They're not concerned about all of these other levels.
Right.
There's only one thing that everyone is focused on, and kind of what you were saying a moment ago. At that point, yes, everyone does want the same thing, right? Everybody wants to survive. And
and
as crazy as it sounds, that is what will bring out the best when we understand that. But I think somehow, God willing, and we haven't done it yet, and I don't know that we ever will, we need to embrace that and say, how do we take this across all of our platforms to say, this is how we live this. Now we're talking about a philosophical approach that is a bridge we have yet to build. So where we go from there, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. You know, Leo, you're right. And I, when I watch these things on TV, these demonstrators going at each other, I shout at the TV, hey, you guys, okay, you have different perspectives, but you're still, again, both ends, you're still all Americans.
Mm.
And we got to stick together. Remember 9/11? What if we got blasted? What if something like that happened again? What if we did get nuked? All of a sudden, you'd be grabbing each other and hugging each other, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, so remember, yes, you may have oppositional ideas, okay, but you're still Americans. You know, live in that both end and proceed from there. But if you forget that, you know, you go one side, we're just opponents. That's all we know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the truth. Yes, you're opponents, but you're also Americans. And we have to, you know, be together, even though we have opposition. So again, the magic is the both and. That's the essence, the charism of our faith, the soul of it. It's there in the Eucharist. And if it could just be understood and lived, boy, what a world we would live in.
Mm-hmm. The both and.
Yeah. It's like a title before.
Yeah, there you go. Feel free to use it. Father, God bless you. It's always great talking to you. We'll talk again on the next one. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leo.